telling the truth. It takes things that are there in reality and puts a twist on them.
Tea? Geoffrey asked, giving Sarah a look.
Yes, sir. Kids have been boiling it in tea to drink.
He clasped his hands behind him.
I've got to tell you, though, it's dangerous stuff, real easy to OD on.
Sarah asked, how else can you ingest it?
If you've got the patience, Mark answered, you can soak the leaves in alcohol for a couple of days, then evaporate it. It's still a crapshoot, though, because the consistency isn't guaranteed, even with people who grow it for medical purposes.
What medical purposes? Geoffrey asked.
Well, you know when you go to the eye doctor and he dilates your eyes? It's a belladonna compound, very diluted, but it's belladonna. You couldn't take a couple of bottles of the eye drops and kill somebody, for instance. At this low level of concentration, the worst you could do is give them a really bad headache and killer constipation. It's at the pure level that you have to be careful.
Frank bumped her arm, handing her the photograph. Sarah looked down at the plant. It looked pretty much like every plant she had ever seen. Sarah was a doctor, not a horticulturalist. She couldn't even grow a chia pet. Without warning, her mind was racing again, thinking back to when she first found Julia Matthews on her car. She was trying to remember if the duct tape had been there. With sudden clarity, Sarah remembered that it had. She could see the tape on the woman's mouth. She could see Julia Matthews' body crucified on the hood of the car.
Sarah?
Geoffrey asked.
Hmm?
Sarah looked up. Everyone was staring at her as if they were anticipating a response to something.
I'm sorry, she apologized. What was it you asked?
Mark answered.
I asked if you noticed anything strange about the victims. Were they unable to speak? Did they have a blank stare?
Sarah handed back the photo. Sybil Adams was blind, she provided, so of course her stare was blank. Julia Matthews, she paused, trying to force the image from her mind. Her eyes were glazed. I imagine it was from being gorked out on this drug more than anything else. Geoffrey gave her a funny look.
Mark mentioned something about belladonna interfering with vision. There's a sort of blindsidedness, Mark said in a tone that implied he was repeating himself. According to user reports, you can see, but your mind can't make out what it is you're seeing. Like, I could show you an apple or an orange, and you would be aware that you were seeing something round, maybe textured, but your brain wouldn't recognize what it is.
I know what blindsidedness is, Sarah returned, realizing too late that her tone was condescending. She tried to cover for this by saying, do you think Sybil Adams experienced this? Maybe that's why she didn't scream out? Mark looked at the other men. Obviously, this was another thing he had covered while Sarah was zoning out.
There's been reported loss of voice from the drug. Nothing physically happens in the voice box. There's no physical restraint or damage caused by the drug. I think it's more to do with something happening in the language center of the brain. It has to be similar to whatever causes the sight recognition problems.
Makes sense, Sarah agreed.
Mark continued. Some signs that it's been ingested would be cotton mouth, dilated pupils, high body temperature, elevated heart rate, and difficulty breathing.
Both victims experienced all of those symptoms, Sarah provided. What kind of dose would bring this about?
It's pretty potent stuff. Just one bag of tea can send somebody loopy, especially if they're not recreational drug users. The berries aren't that bad on a scale of things, but anything from the root or the leaf is going to be dangerous, unless you know exactly what you're doing. And then there's no guarantee.
The first victim was a vegetarian, Sarah said.
She was a chemist, too, right? Mark asked. I can think of a million different drugs to fool around with other than belladonna. I don't think anybody who took the time to research it would take that kind of risk. It's Russian roulette, especially if you're dealing with the root. That's the deadliest part. Just a little bit too much from the root and you're gone. There's no known antidote.
I didn't see any signs of drug use in Julia Matthews, she said to Geoffrey. I suppose you're going to interview her after this?
He nodded, then asked Mark, anything else?
Mark brushed his fingers through his hair. After the drug, there's noted constipation, still the cotton mouth, sometimes hallucinations. It's interesting to know that the drug was used in a sex crime. Ironic, even.
How's that? Jeffrey asked.
During the Middle Ages, the drug was sometimes inserted with a vaginal applicator so that the rush would come sooner. There are even some people who think the whole myth of witches flying on broomsticks comes from the image of a woman inserting the drug with a wooden applicator.
He smiled.
But then we'd have to get into a protracted discussion on deity worshipping and the rise of Christianity in European cultures.
Mark seemed to sense he had lost his audience.
People in drug communities who know about belladonna tend to stay away from it.
He looked at Sarah.
If you'll excuse the language, ma'am.
Sarah shrugged. Between the clinic and her father, she had pretty much heard it all.
Mark still blushed when he said, "It's a total mindfuck."
He offered Sarah a smile in apology.
The number one memory, even among users with amnesia, is flying. They really believe they're flying, and they can't understand, even after they come down, that they haven't actually flown.
Jeffrey crossed his arms.
That might explain why she keeps staring out the window.
Has she said anything yet? Sarah asked.
He shook his head.
Nothing.
Then, we're going to the hospital next if you want to see her.
Sarah looked at her watch, pretending to consider this. There was no way in hell she was going to see Julia Matthews again. It was too much to even think about.
I've got patience, she said.
Jeffrey indicated his office.
Sarah, mind if I talk to you for a second?
Sarah felt the urge to bolt, but she fought it. Is this about my car?
No.
Jeffrey waited until she was in his office, then shut the door. Sarah sat on the edge of his desk, trying for a casual pose.
I had to take my boat into work this morning, Sarah said. Do you know how cold it is on the lake?
He ignored this, getting straight to the point.
Found your gun.
Oh,
Sarah answered, trying to think of what to say. Of all the things she had been expecting him to say, this was the last one. The Ruger had been in her car for so long that she had forgotten about it.
Am I under arrest?
Where did you get it?
It was a gift.
Jeffrey gave her a hard look.
What? Somebody gave you a 357 with the serial numbers filed off for your birthday?
Sarah shrugged this off. I've had it for years, Jeffrey.
When did you buy that car, Sarah? A couple of years ago?
I moved it from the old one when I bought it.
He stared at her, not speaking. Sarah could tell that he was mad, but she did not know what to say. She tried,
I've never used it.
That makes me feel good, Sarah. He snapped. You've got a gun in your car capable of literally taking somebody's head off, and you don't know how to use it?
He paused, obviously trying to understand.
What are you gonna do if someone comes after you, huh?
Sarah knew the answer to this, but she did not say.
Jeffrey asked, Why do you have it in the first place?
Sarah studied her ex-husband, trying to figure out the best way to get out of this office without having another fight. She was tired, and she was upset. This wasn't the time to go a few rounds with Jeffrey. Sarah just did not have the fight in her at the moment.
I just had it, she answered.
You don't just have this kind of gun, he said.
I need to get back to the clinic.
She stood, but he was blocking her exit.
Sarah, what the hell is going on?
What do you mean?
His eyes narrowed, but he did not answer. He moved aside, opening the door for her. Sarah thought for a second that it was a trick.
That's it? She asked.
He stepped aside.
It's not like I can beat it out of you.
She put her hand to his chest, feeling guilty.
Jeffrey.
He looked out into the squad room.
I need to go over to the hospital, he said.
Obviously, dismissing her.
Chapter 16. Lena leaned her head into her hand, trying to close her eyes for just a minute of rest. She had been sitting in a chair outside Julia Matthews' room for over an hour,
and the last few days were finally catching up with her. She was tired and about to start her period. Despite this, her pants were loose on her hips from not eating. When she snapped her paddle holster on over her belt this morning, it was loose against her hip. As the day wore on, it started to rub, chafing her side. Lena knew she needed to eat, needed to get back to living her life instead of just dragging along through every day like she was living on borrowed time. For now, she could not imagine doing that. She didn't want to get up in the morning and go for a run, like she had every morning for the last 15 years. She did not want to go down to the Krispy Kreme and get coffee with Frank and the other detectives. She did not want to go pack her lunch or go out to dinner. Every time she looked at food, she felt sick. All she could think was that Sybil would never eat again. Lena was walking around while Sybil was dead. Lena was breathing while Sybil was not. Nothing made sense. Nothing would ever be the same again. Lena took a deep breath and let it go, looking up and down the hallway. Julia Matthews was the only patient in the hospital today, which made Lena's job easy. Except for a nurse who had been floated down on loan from Augusta, it was just Lena and Julia on this floor. She stood, trying to walk some sense into her brain. She was feeling punch drunk, and Lena could not think of anything to fight this other than to remain in motion. Her body ached from restless sleep, and she was still unable to get the image of Sybil in the morgue out of her mind. Part of Lena was glad that there was another victim, though. Part of Lena wanted to go into Julia Matthews' room and shake her, to beg her to speak, to tell them who had done this to her, who had killed Sybil, but Lena knew this would get them nowhere. The few times Lena had gone into the room to check on the girl, she had been silent, not answering even the most innocuous questions from Lena. Did she want another pillow? Was there anyone she wanted Lena to call for her? Thirsty, the girl had pointed to the pitcher on the hospital table rather than ask for water. Her eyes still had a haunted look about them, too, caused by the fact that the drug was still in her system. Her pupils were wide open, and she had the look of someone who was blind, blind like Sybil had been. Only Julia Matthews would recover from this. Julia Matthews would see again. She would get better. She would go back to school and make friends, maybe meet a husband one day and have kids. Memories of what had happened would always be in the back of Julia Matthews' mind, but at least she would have a life. At least she would have a future. Lena knew that part of her resented Matthews for this. Lena knew, too, that she would trade Julia Matthews' life for Sybil's on a second's notice. The elevator dinged open, and Lena put her hand to her gun without thinking. Jeffrey and Nick Shelton walked into the hallway, followed by Frank and a skinny-looking kid who looked like he had just come from his high school graduation. She dropped her hand, walking to meet them, thinking she'd be damned if all those men were going into the small hospital room containing a woman who had just been raped. Especially Opie. "How's she doing?" Jeffrey asked. Lena skipped the question. "You're not all going in there, are you?" The look on Jeffrey's face said he had planned just this. "She's still not talking," Lena said, trying to help him save face. "She hasn't said anything." "Maybe just you and I should go in," he finally decided. "Sorry, Mark." The young man did not seem to mind. "Hey, I'm just glad this got me out of the office for a day." Lena thought it was pretty shitty of him to say this within walking distance of a woman who had arguably been to hell and back. But Jeffrey caught her arm before she could say anything. He led her up the hallway, talking as they walked. "She stable?" he asked. "Her medical condition?" "Yeah." Jeffrey stopped at the door to the room, his hand on the handle but not opening it. "How about you? You're doing okay?" "Sure." "I have a feeling her parents are going to want to move her to Augusta. How do you feel about going with her?" Lena's first impulse was to protest, but but she nodded an uncharacteristic acquiescence. It might do her some good to get out of town. Hank would be going back to Reese in a day or two. Maybe she would feel differently when she had the house back to herself.
"I'll let you start," Jeffrey said. "If she looks like she'll be more comfortable with just you, then I'll step out."
"Right," Lena said, knowing this was standard procedure. Generally, the last thing a woman who had been raped wanted was to talk to a man about it. As the only female detective on the squad, this job had fallen to Lena a couple of times before. She had even gone to Macon once to help interview a young girl there who had been brutally beaten and raped by her next-door neighbor. Still, even though Lena had been at the hospital all day with Julia, something about actually talking to the girl, interviewing her, made Lena feel sick to her stomach. It was too close to home.
"You ready?" Jeffrey asked, his hand on the door.
"Yeah." Jeffrey opened the door, letting Lena go in ahead of him. Julia Matthews was asleep, but she woke at the noise. Lena didn't imagine the young girl would have a good night's sleep for a long while, if ever. "Want some water?" Lena asked, walking to the far side of the bed, picking up the pitcher. She filled the girl's glass, then turned the straw so she could drink. Jeffrey stood with his back close to the door, obviously wanting to give the young girl space. He said, "I'm Chief Tolliver, Julia. Do you remember me from this morning?" She gave a slow nod. "You've ingested a drug called belladonna. Do you know what that is?" She shook her head side to side. "It causes you to lose your voice sometimes. Do you think you can speak?"
The girl opened her mouth, and a scratchy sound came out. She moved her lips, obviously trying to form words. Jeffrey gave an encouraging smile.
"Want to try to tell me your name?"
She opened her mouth again, her voice raspy and small.
"Julia."
"Good," Jeffrey said. "This is Lena Adams. You know her, right?"
Julia nodded, her eyes finding Lena.
"She's going to ask you some questions, okay?"
Lena tried not to hide her surprise. She wasn't sure she could tell Julia Matthews the time of day, let alone question the young woman. Lena fell back on her training, starting with what she knew.
"Julia?"
Lena pulled up a chair to the young woman's bed.
"We need to know if you can tell us anything about what was done to you."
Julia closed her eyes. Her lips quivered, but she did not answer.
"Did you know him, sweetie?"
She shook her head.
"Was it someone from one of your classes? Had you seen him around school?"
Julia's eyes closed. Tears came a few seconds later. She finally said,
"No."
Lena put her hand on the girl's arm. It was thin and frail, much as Sybil's had seemed in the morgue. She tried not to think about her sister when she said,
"Let's talk about his hair. Can you tell me what color it was?"
Again, she shook her head.
"Any tattoos or marks that might help us identify him?"
"No."
Lena said, "I know this is hard, honey, but we have to find out what happened. We need to get this guy off the street so he can't hurt anyone else."
Julia kept her eyes closed. The room was intolerably quiet, so much so that Lena felt the urge to do something loud. The silence was making her nervous for some reason. Without warning, Julia finally spoke. Her voice was husky.
"He tricked me."
Lena pressed her lips together, letting the girl have her time.
"He tricked me,"
Julia repeated, squeezing her eyes shut even tighter.
"I was at the library."
Lena thought about Ryan Gordon, her heart thumped in her chest. Had she been wrong about him? Was he capable of doing something like this? Maybe Julia had escaped while he was in jail.
"I had a test," Julia continued, "and I stayed late to study."
Her breathing became labored at the memory. Let's take some deep breaths, Lena said. Then she breathed in and out, with Julia.
That's good, honey. Just keep calm.
She started to cry in earnest now.
Ryan was there, she said.
Lena allowed herself to look at Jeffrey. He was focused on Matthews, his brow furrowed. She could almost read his thoughts.
At the library? Lena asked, trying not to sound too pushy.
Julian nodded, then reached out for her glass of water. Here, Lena said, helping her lean up so that she could drink. The girl took several swallows, then let her head drop back down. She stared out the window again, her mind obviously taking time to recover. Lena tried not to tap her foot. She wanted to reach over the bed and force the girl to talk. She could not understand how Julian Matthews could be so passive in her interrogation. If Lena were in that bed, she would be spitting out every detail she had. Lena would be pushing whoever would listen to find the man who did this. Her hands would be itching to rip his heart out of his chest. How Julian Matthews could just lie there, she did not know. Lena counted to 20, forcing herself to give the woman some time. She had counted in the Ryan Gordon interview. It was an old trick of hers, and the only way she could make herself at least appear patient. When she reached 50, Lena asked, "Ryan was there?" Julia nodded. "In the library." She nodded again. Lena reached over, putting her hand on Julia's arm again. She would have held her hand if it had not been wrapped in tight bandages. She kept her tone even, putting in just a little bit of pressure as she said, "You saw Ryan at the library. Then what happened?" Julia responded to the pressure. "We talked a little while, and then I had to go back to the dorm."
"Were you mad at him?"
Julia's eyes found Lena's. Something passed between them, an unvoiced message. Lena knew then that Ryan had some kind of control over Julia, but that she wanted to break it. Lena also knew that, as much of a bastard as Ryan Gordon was, he had not been the man to do this to his girlfriend. Lena asked, "Did you argue?"
"We kind of made up, though."
"Kind of, but not really," Lena clarified, sensing what had happened in the library that night. She could see Ryan Gordon trying to push Julia into making some kind of commitment to him. She could also see that Julia's eyes had finally been opened as to what kind of person her ex-boyfriend was. Julia had finally seen him for what he was. But someone else more evil than Ryan Gordon could ever hope to be had been waiting for her. Lena asked, "So you left the library?"
"Then what?"
"There was a man," she said, "on the way to the dorm." "Which way did you walk?"
"The back way, around the Agra building."
"By the lake?" She shook her head.
"The other side."
Lena waited for her to continue.
"I ran into him and he dropped his books, and I dropped mine."
Her voice trailed off, but her breathing became loud in the small room. She was nearly panting.
"Did you see his face then?"
"I don't remember. He gave me a shot." Lena felt her eyebrows furrow.
"Like a shot with a syringe?"
"I felt it. I didn't see it."
"Where did you feel it?"
She put her hand to her left hip.
"Was he behind you when you felt it?" Lena asked, thinking this would make the killer left-handed, just like Sybil's attacker.
"Yeah."
"So he took you then?" Lena asked. "He ran into you, then you felt the shot, then he took you somewhere?"
"Yes."
"In his car?"
"I don't remember," she said. "The next thing I knew, I was in a basement." She put her hands over her face, crying in earnest. Her body started to shake with grief.
"It's okay,"
Lena said, putting her hand over the other woman's.
"Do you want to stop now?"
You're in charge of this. The room was quiet again but for Julia's breathing. When she did speak again, her voice was a hoarse, almost imperceptible whisper.
He raped me.
Lena felt a lump in her throat. She knew this already, of course, but the way Julia said the word stripped Lena of every defense she had. Lena felt raw and exposed. She did not want Jeffrey in the room. For some reason, he seemed to sense this. When she looked up at him, he nodded toward the door. Lena mouthed a yes, and he left without a sound.
"Do you know what happened next?" Lena asked.
Julia moved her head, trying to find Jeffrey. "He's gone," Lena said, giving her voice an assured tone that she did not feel.
"It's just us, Julia. It's just you and me, and we've got all day if you need it. All week, all year."
She paused, lest the girl take that as encouragement to stop the interview.
"Just keep in mind that the sooner we get the details, the sooner we can stop him."
"You don't want him to do this to another girl, do you?" She took the question hard, as Lena expected she would. Lena knew she had to be a little tough or the girl would simply shut up, keeping the details to herself. Julia sobbed, the noise filling the room, ringing in Lena's ears. Julia said,
"I don't want this to happen to anyone else."
"Me either," Lena answered.
"You have to tell me what he did to you."
She paused, then,
"Did you see his face at any time?"
"No,"
she answered.
"I mean, I did, but I couldn't tell. I couldn't make the connection. It was so dark all the time. There was no light at all."
"Are you sure it was a basement?"
"It smelled," she said, "musty, and I could hear water dripping."
"Water?" Lena asked. "Like, dripping from a faucet or maybe from the lake?"
"A faucet,"
Julia said.
"More like a faucet. It sounded."
She closed her eyes, and for a few seconds, she seemed to let herself go back to that place.
"Like a metallic clinking."
She mimicked the sound.
"Clink, clink, clink, over and over. It never stopped."
She put her hands over her ears, as if to stop the noise.
"Let's go back to the college," Lena said. "You felt the shot in your hip, then what? Do you know what kind of car he was driving?"
Julia shook her head again, in an exaggerated sweep left to right.
"I don't remember. I was picking up my books, and the next thing I knew, I was...
Her voice trailed off. "In the basement?" Lena provided. "Do you remember anything about where you were?"
"It was dark."
"You couldn't make anything out?"
"I couldn't open my eyes. They wouldn't open."
Her voice so soft that Lena had to strain to hear.
"I was flying."
"Flying?"
"I kept floating up, like I was on water. I could hear the waves from the ocean."
Lena took a deep breath, then let it out slowly.
"Did he have you on your back?"
Julia's face crumpled at this, and she shook with sobs.
"Honey,"
Lena prompted. "Was he white? Black? Could you tell?" She shook her head again.
"I couldn't open my eyes. He talked to me. His voice."
Her lips were trembling, and her face had turned an alarming shade of red. The tears came in earnest now, marking a continual stream down her face.
"He said he loved me."
She gasped for air as the panic took hold.
"He kept kissing me, his tongue."
She stopped, sobbing. Lena took a deep breath, trying to calm herself down.
She was pushing too hard. Lena counted to a slow 100, then said, "The holes in your hands. We know he put something in your hands and feet." Julia looked at the bandages, as if seeing them for the first time.
"Yes," she said. "I woke up and my hands were nailed down. I could see the nail go through, but it didn't hurt."
"You were on the floor?"
"I think so. I felt..."
She seemed to look for a word.
"I felt suspended. I was flying. How did he make me fly? Was I flying?"
Lena cleared her throat. "No," she answered. Then began, "Julia, can you think of anybody new in your life, maybe someone on campus or in town who was making you uncomfortable? Maybe you felt like you were being watched?"
"I'm still being watched," she said, looking out the window.
"I'm watching you," Lena said, turning the girl's face back toward her. "I'm watching you, Julia. Nobody's going to hurt you again. Do you understand that? Nobody."
"I don't feel safe," she said again, her face crumpling as she started to cry again. "He can see me. I know he can see me."
"It's just you and me here," Lena assured her. When she spoke, it was like talking to Sybil, assuring Sybil that she would be taken care of. "When you go to Augusta, I'll be with you. I'm not going to let you out of my sight, do you understand that?" Julia seemed to be more frightened despite Lena's words. Her voice was raspy when she asked,
"Why am I going to Augusta?"
"I don't know that for sure," Lena answered, reaching for the water pitcher. "Don't worry about that right now."
"Who's going to send me to Augusta?"
Julia asked, her lips trembling. "Drink some more water," Lena told her, holding the cup up to her lips. "Your parents are going to be here soon. Don't worry about anything but taking care of yourself and getting better." The girl choked, and water spilled down her neck and onto the bed. Her eyes opened wide in panic.
"Why are you moving me?" she asked. "What's going to happen?"
"We won't move you if you don't want," Lena said. "I'll talk to your parents."
"My parents?"
"They should be here soon," Lena assured her. "It's okay."
"Do they know?"
Julia asked, her voice raised.
"Did you tell them what happened to me?"
"I don't know," Lena answered. "I'm not sure if they know any of the details."
"You can't tell my daddy," the girl sobbed. "Nobody can tell my father, okay? He can't know what happened."
"You didn't do anything," Lena said. "Julia, your dad's not going to blame you for this." Julia was quiet. After a while, she looked back out the window, tears streaming down her cheeks.
"It's okay,"
Lena soothed, taking a tissue out of the box on the table. She reached over the girl, blotting the water off the pillow. The last thing this girl needed to think about was how her father would react to what had happened to her. Lena had worked with rape victims before. She knew how the blame worked. Very seldom did a victim blame anyone but herself. There was a strange noise Lena found vaguely familiar. Too late, she realized it was her gun.
"Move away,"
Julia whispered. She held the gun awkwardly in her bandaged hands. It tilted toward Lena, then back toward Julia as she tried to get a better grip on the weapon. Lena looked toward the door, thinking to call for Jeffrey, but Julia warned her,
"Don't."
Lena held her hands out to her sides, but did not back up. She knew the safety was on, but also knew it would take a matter of seconds for the girl to switch it off. Lena said, "Give me the gun."
"You don't understand,"
the girl said, tears welling into her eyes.
You don't understand what he did to me. How he...
She stopped, choking on a sob. She did not have a good grip on the gun, but the barrel was pointed toward Lena and her finger was on the trigger. Lena felt a cold sweat overcome her, and she honestly could not recall if the safety was on or off. What she did know was that a round was already chambered. Once the safety was off, a tap on the trigger would fire the weapon. Lena tried to keep her voice calm. "What, sweetheart? What don't I understand?" Julia tilted the gun back toward her own head. She fumbled, almost dropping it before letting the barrel rest on her chin.
"Don't do that," Lena begged. "Please give me the gun. There's a bullet in the chamber."
"I know about guns."
"Julia, please," Lena said, knowing she needed to keep the girl talking. "Listen to me." A slight smile came to her lips.
"My daddy used to take me hunting with him. He used to let me help him clean the rifles."
"Julia."
"When I was there," she choked back a sob. "When I was with him."
"The man? The man who abducted you?"
"You don't know what he did," she said,
her voice tight in her throat.
"The things he did to me, I can't tell you."
"I'm so sorry," Lena said. She wanted to move forward, but there was a look to Julia Matthews' eyes that kept her rooted to the floor. Charging the girl was not an option. Lena said, "I won't let him hurt you again, Julia. I promise."
"You don't understand,"
the girl sobbed, sliding the gun up to the cleft of her chin. She could barely grip the weapon, but Lena knew this wouldn't matter at such a close range.
"Honey, please don't," Lena said, her eyes going to the door.
Jeffrey was on the other side. Maybe she could alert him somehow without letting Julia know.
"Don't," Julia said, as if reading Lena's mind. "You don't have to do this," Lena said.
She tried to make her voice firmer, but the truth was Lena had only read about this kind of situation in procedural manuals. She had never talked someone out of suicide.
Julia said, "The way he touched me, the way he kissed me."
Her voice broke.
"You just don't know."
"What?" Lena asked, slowly moving her hand toward the gun. "What don't I know?"
"He..."
She stopped, a guttural sound coming from her throat.
"He made love to me."
He
made love to me,"
she repeated, a whisper that echoed in the room.
"Do you know what that means?"
she asked.
"He kept saying he didn't want to hurt me. He wanted to make love to me. He did."
Lena felt her mouth open, but there was nothing she could say. She couldn't be hearing what she thought she was hearing.
"What are you saying?" she asked, aware of the sharpness in her tone. "What do you mean?"
"He made love to me," Julia repeated. "The way he touched me."
Lena shook her head as if to rid this from her mind. She could not keep the incredulity out of her tone when she asked, "Are you saying you enjoyed it?" A snapping sound came as Julia disengaged the safety. Lena felt too stunned to move, but somehow managed to reach Julia seconds before the girl pulled the trigger. Lena looked down in time to see Julia Matthews' head explode beneath her. The water from the shower came like needles against Lena's skin. She was aware of the burning, but it was not uncomfortable. She was numb to all sensations, numb from the inside out. Her knees gave, and Lena let herself slide down into the tub. She pulled her knees to her chest, closing her eyes as the water beat down on her breasts and face. She bent her head forward, feeling like a rag doll.
The water pummeled the top of her head, bruised the back of her neck. But she did not care. Her body did not belong to her anymore. She was empty. She could not think of one thing that had meaning in her life. Not her job, not Jeffrey, not Hank Norton, and certainly not herself. Julia Matthews was dead, just like Sybil. Lena had failed them both. The water started to run cold, the spray pricking against her skin. Lena turned off the shower and dried herself with a towel, feeling as if she was just going through the motions. Her body still felt dirty, despite the fact that this was her second shower in the last 5 hours. There was a strange taste in her mouth, too. Lena wasn't sure if it was her imagination or if something had gone into her mouth when Julia had pulled the trigger. She shuddered, thinking about this.
"Lee?"
Hank called from outside the bathroom door.
"I'll be down in a minute,"
Lena answered, putting paste on her toothbrush. She looked at herself in the mirror as she tried to scrub the taste out of her mouth. The resemblance to Sybil was gone today. There was nothing left of her sister. Lena went down to the kitchen in her robe and bedroom slippers. Outside the kitchen door, she put her hand to the wall, feeling lightheaded and sick to her stomach. She was forcing her body to move. Otherwise, she would go to sleep and never wake up. Her body ached to give in to that. Ached to cut off. But Lena knew that as soon as her head hit the pillow, she would be wide awake, her mind playing back the sight of Julia Matthews just before she killed herself. The girl had been looking at Lena when she pulled the trigger. Their eyes had locked, and Lena did not need to see the gun to know that death was on the younger woman's mind. Hank was at the kitchen table drinking a Coke. He stood when she entered the room. Lena felt a flush of shame and couldn't look him in the eye. She had been strong in the car as Frank drove her back to the house. She had not said a word to her partner, or commented on the fact that, despite her efforts to clean herself at the hospital, she had gray matter and blood sticking to her like hot wax. There were pieces of bone in her breast pocket, and she could feel blood dripping down her face and neck, even though she had wiped it all off at the hospital. It was not until she had the front door closed behind her that Lena let herself go. That Hank had been there, that she had let him hold her in his arms while she sobbed, was something that still brought a sense of shame to her. She did not know herself anymore. She did not know who this weak person was. Lena glanced out the window, noting, "It's dark out."
"You slept a while,"
Hank said, going to the stove.
"You want some tea?"
"Yeah," Lena said, though she had not slept at all. Closing her eyes only brought her closer to what had happened. If she never slept again, Lena would be fine.
"Your boss called to check on you," Hank said.
"Oh," Lena answered, sitting at the table, her leg tucked underneath her. She wondered what was going through Jeffrey's mind. He had been out in the hallway, waiting for Lena to call him in, when the gun went off. Lena remembered the expression of absolute shock on his face when he burst through the doorway. Lena had stood there, still leaning over Julia, flesh and bone dripping from her chest and face. Jeffrey had forced her out of this position, patting his hands down Lena's body, checking to make sure she had not been shot in the process. Lena had stood mute while he did this, unable to take her eyes off of what was left of Julia Matthews' face. The young girl had put the gun under her chin, blowing out the back of her head. The wall behind and over the bed was splattered. A bullet hole was 3 feet down from the ceiling. Jeffrey had forced Lena to stay in that room, drilling her for every bit of information she had gotten from Julia Matthews, questioning every detail of Lena's narrative as Lena stood there, her lip trembling uncontrollably.
unable to follow the words coming out of her own mouth. Lena put her head in her hands. She listened as Hank filled the kettle, heard the click as the electric starter on the gas stove kicked in. Hank sat in front of her, his hands crossed in front of him.
"You okay?"
he asked.
"I don't know," she answered, her own voice sounding far away.
The gun had gone off close to her ear. The ringing had stopped a while ago, but sound still came like a dull ache.
"You know what I was thinking," Hank asked, sitting back in his chair. "Remember that time you fell off the front porch?"
Lena stared at him, not understanding where he was going with this.
"Yeah? Well,"
he shrugged, smiling for some reason.
"Sybil pushed you."
Lena wasn't sure she had heard him right.
"What?"
he assured Lena.
"She pushed you. I saw her."
"She pushed me off the porch?" Lena shook her head. "She was trying to keep me from falling."
"She was blind, Lee. How did she know you were falling?"
Lena's mouth worked. He had a point. "I had to get 16 stitches in my leg."
"I know."
"She pushed me?" Lena questioned, her voice raised a few octaves. "Why did she push me?"
"I don't know. Maybe she was just kidding," Hank chuckled. "You let out such a holler, I thought the neighbors were gonna come."
"I doubt the neighbors would have come if they'd heard a 21-gun salute," Lena commented. Hank Norton's neighbors had learned early on to expect all kinds of commotion coming from his house night and day.
"Remember that time at the beach?" Hank began.
Lena stared at him, trying to figure out why he was bringing this up.
"What time?"
"When you couldn't find your kickboard."
"The red one?" Lena asked. Then, "Don't tell me, she pushed it off the balcony?"
He chuckled. "Nope. She lost it in the pool."
"How can you lose a kickboard in the pool?" He waved this off.
"I guess some kid took it. The point was, it was yours. You told her not to take it, and she did. And she lost it."
Despite herself, Lena felt some of the weight on her shoulders lifting.
"Why are you telling me this?"
Again, he gave a small shrug.
"I don't know. I was just thinking about her this morning. Remember that shirt she used to wear? The one with the green stripes?"
Lena nodded.
"She still had it."
"No," Lena said, surprised. They had fought over that shirt during high school until Hank had settled it with a coin toss.
"Why did she keep it?"
"It was hers," Hank said.
Lena stared at her uncle, not sure what to say. He stood up, taking a mug from the cabinet.
"You want some time to yourself, or do you want me around?"
Lena considered his question. She needed to be alone, to get some sense of herself back, and she could not do that around Hank of all people.
"Are you going back to Reese?"
"I thought I'd stay at Nan's tonight and help her sort through some things."
Lena felt a slight panic.
"She's not throwing things away, is she?"
"No, of course not. She's just going through things, getting her clothes together."
Hank leaned against the counter, his arms crossed.
"She shouldn't have to do that alone."
Lena stared at her hands. There was something under her fingernails. She couldn't tell if it was dirt or blood. She put her finger in her mouth, using her bottom teeth to clean it. Hank watched this. He said,
"You could come by later if you felt like it."
Lena shook her head, biting the nail. She would tear it off to the quick before she let the blood stay there. "I have to get up early for work tomorrow," she lied.
"But if you change your mind..."
"Maybe," she mumbled around her finger. She tasted blood, surprised to see that it was her own.
The cuticle had come away on the nail. A bright red dot radiated from the spot. Hank stood, staring, then grabbed his coat off the back of his chair. They had been through this kind of thing before, though admittedly never on this scale. It was an old, familiar dance, and they both knew the moves. Hank took one step forward, Lena took two steps back. Now wasn't the time to change any of this. He said,
"You can call me if you need me. You know that, right?"
"Mm-hmm," she mumbled, pressing her lips together. She was going to cry again, and Lena thought that a part of her would die if she broke down in front of Hank again. He seemed to sense this because he put his hand on her shoulder, then kissed the top of her head. Lena kept her head down, waiting for the click as the front door closed. She gave a long sigh as Hank's car backed out of the driveway. The kettle was steaming, but the whistle had not started yet. Lena did not particularly like tea, but she rummaged around in the cabinets anyway, looking for the bags. She found a box of tummy mint just as a knock came at the back door. She expected to see Hank, so Lena was surprised when she opened the door. "Oh. Hi," she said, rubbing her ear as a shrill noise came. She realized the tea kettle was whistling and said, "Hold on a second." She was turning off the burner when she felt a presence behind her. Then a sharp sting came to her left thigh. Chapter 17. Sarah stood in front of the body of Julia Matthews with her arms crossed over her chest. She stared at the girl, trying to assess her with a clinical eye, trying to separate the girl whose life Sarah had saved from the dead woman on the table. The incision Sarah had made to access Julia's heart was not yet healed, the black sutures still thick with dried blood. A small hole was at the base of the woman's chin. Burns around the entrance wound revealed the barrel of the gun was pressed into the chin when it was fired. A gaping hole at the back of the girl's head revealed the exit wound. Bone hung from the open skull, like macabre ornaments on a bloody Christmas tree. The smell of gunpowder was in the air. Julia Matthews' body lay on the porcelain autopsy table, much as Sybil Adams had a few days ago. At the head of the table was a faucet with a black rubber hose attached. Hanging over this was an organ scale much like the scales grocers use to weigh fruit and vegetables. Beside the table were the tools of autopsy, a scalpel, a 16-inch-long surgically sharpened bread knife, a pair of equally sharpened scissors, a pair of forceps or pickups, a striker saw to cut bone, and a set of long-handled pruning shears one would normally find in a garage by the lawnmower. Kathy Linton had a similar set herself, and whenever Sarah saw her mother pruning azaleas, she always thought about using the shears at the morgue to cut away the ribcage. Sarah mindlessly followed the various steps for preparing the body of Julia Matthews for autopsy. Her thoughts were elsewhere. Back to the night before when Julia Matthews was on Sarah's car. Back to when the girl was alive and had a chance. Sarah had never minded performing autopsies before, never been disturbed by death. Opening a body was like opening a book. There were many things which could be learned from tissue and organ. In death, the body was available for thorough evaluation. Part of the reason Sarah had taken the job as medical examiner for Grant County was that she had become bored with her practice at the clinic. The coroner's job presented a challenge, an opportunity to learn a new skill and to help people. Though the thought of cutting up Julia Matthews, exposing her body to more abuse, cut through Sarah like a knife. Again, Sarah looked at what was left of Julia Matthews' head. Gunshots to the head were notoriously unpredictable. Most times the victim ended up comatose, a vegetable who, through the miracles of modern science, quietly lived out the rest of the life they did not want in the first place. Julia Matthews had done a better job than most when she put the gun under her chin and pulled the trigger. The bullet had entered her skull at an upward trajectory, breaking the sphenoid, plowing along the lateral cerebral fissure, then busting out through the occipital bone. The back of the head was gone, affording a straight view into the brain case. Unlike in her earlier suicide attempt, witnessed by the scarring on her wrists, Julia Matthews had meant to end her life. Unquestionably, the girl had known what she was doing. Sarah felt sick to her stomach. She wanted to shake the girl back to life, to demand she go on living, to ask her how she could have gone through with everything that had happened to her in the last few days, only to end up taking her life. It seemed that the very horrors Julia Matthews had survived had also ended up killing her.
"You okay?" Jeffrey asked, giving her a concerned look.
"Yeah," Sarah managed, wondering if she really was. She felt raw, like a wound that would not scab. Sarah knew that if Jeffrey made a pass at her, she would take him up on the offer. All she could think of was how good it would feel to let him take her into his arms, to feel his lips kissing hers, his tongue in her mouth. Her body ached for him now, in a way she had not ached for him in years. She did not particularly want sex. She just wanted the assurance of his presence. She wanted to feel protected. She wanted to belong to him. Sarah had learned a long time ago that sex was the only way Jeffrey knew how to give her these things. From across the table, Jeffrey asked, "Sarah?" She opened her mouth, thinking to proposition him, but stopped herself. So much had happened in the last few years. So much had changed. The man she wanted did not really exist anymore. Sarah wasn't sure if he ever had. She cleared her throat. "Yeah?"
"You want to hold off on this?" he asked.
"No," Sarah answered in a clipped tone, inwardly berating herself for thinking she needed Jeffrey. The truth was she didn't. She had gotten this far without him. She could certainly go further. She tapped her foot on the remote for the dictaphone, stating, "This is the unembalmed body of a thin but well-built, well-nourished, young adult white female weighing..." Sarah looked at the chalkboard over Jeffrey's shoulder, where she had made notations. 112 pounds and having a length of 64 inches. She tapped the recorder off, taking a deep breath to clear her mind. Sarah was having trouble breathing. "Sarah?" She tapped the recorder back on, shaking her head at him. The sympathy she had so wanted a few minutes ago now irritated her. She felt exposed. She dictated, "The appearance of the decedent is consistent with the stated age of 22. The body has been refrigerated for a period of no less than 3 hours and is cool to the touch." Sarah stopped, clearing her throat. "Rigor mortis is formed and fixed in the upper and lower extremities, and patches of liver mortis are seen posteriorly on the trunk and extremities, except in areas of pressure." And on it went, this clinical description of a woman who only hours ago had been battered but alive, who weeks ago had been content, if not happy. Sarah catalogued the exterior appearance of Julia Matthews, imagining in her mind what the woman must have gone through. Was she awake when her teeth were pulled out so that her attacker could rape her face? Was she conscious when her rectum was being ripped open? Did the drugs block the sensations when she was nailed to the floor? An autopsy could only reveal the physical damage. The girl's state of mind, her level of consciousness, would remain a mystery. No one would know what was going through her mind as she was assaulted. No one would ever see exactly what this girl had seen. Sarah could only guess, and she did not like the images such guessing brought to mind. Again, she saw herself on the hospital gurney. Again, she saw herself being examined. Sarah forced herself to look up from the body, feeling